Invaluable intelligence, short and sweet. eMarketer's Chart of the Day newsletter delivers one insightful chart each day to help you better understand trends across marketing, media, advertising, commerce, technology, finance, and more. Each edition also includes suggestions on how you can use these charts in presentations and pitch decks. Visit the link in the show notes to sign up today. Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, November 8th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's episode topic is how to incentivize impulse purchasing online. First, let's meet today's guests. Joining me for today's episode, we have in the studio with me, Senior Director of Briefings, Jeremy Goldman. Hey, Jeremy.
Great to be with you in the studio at the same time for the first time ever.
Also with us today, we have analyst Ariel Fager. Hey, Ariel.
Hi, happy to be back.
Happy to have you and happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. I did not know that.
Thank you very much.
Let's get started with free sample. Our Did You Know segment, where I share a fun fact, tidbit, or question. Today I have a fun fact. Actually, Ariel, you found this one and featured it as a quiz in our free retail newsletter, so there's a shameless plug.
Ooh.
Brock's makes 30 million pounds of candy corn each year, according to CNN. So my question for both of you, have you contributed to consuming those 30 million pounds of candy corn this year?
I haven't yet. I actually usually do buy at least one little bag of candy corn, but I haven't done that yet this year. So
you're a candy corn enjoyer?
I guess I would say that. I like to have a couple pieces and then I'm done. So, you know. Okay.
I don't know if this counts, but I didn't have regular candy corn this year, but I did have Nerds candy corn.
What is Nerds candy
corn? It's basically a trip to the dentist. It's this, you know, outer shell. And then inside there's like a different flavor. It's really good. You might be surprised it has sugar in it. Yeah, and citric acid. And it's delicious.
Nerds are really having a brand resurgence. I think if we do another episode on brands that are having a comeback, Nerds is a big one that I don't think enough people are talking about.
Don't sleep on Nerds.
I think that's a great idea. I've been a lifelong Nerds fan, so I'm on it.
All right. Sorry, Brox. Nerds is coming for your seasonality. Okay, now it's time for our next segment. Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is how to incentivize impulse purchases online. For the purposes of this conversation, we're using impulse buying to refer to those very fast, low consideration purchases where you're pulling the trigger on buying very quickly. Think grabbing a Reese's cup in the grocery store checkout line or a makeup brush in the Sephora line. Except for when you're buying online, you are obviously not standing in line, which is the whole advantage of e-commerce. It's frictionless. Before we go too far into the challenges, though, let's discuss how e-commerce can encourage impulse buying, because it definitely can. So, Jeremy, why don't you kick us off with how can e-commerce inspire impulse buying?
So I think that's a really good question. I think one of the first things that everybody has to acknowledge is that it's a very different paradigm, right? You don't, when it comes to online, like people can just check out and conduct transactions as quickly as possible. But in store, you know, they have to wait, you know, and see all of those, you know, Hershey candies and magazines, you know, as you're getting closer to checkout. So I think it's really a difficult thing. One of the things that people have tried to do is to, in addition to have a frictionless checkout, try to say, hey, by the way, these are a few things that you might want that you haven't considered. Or by the way, you know, we have the sale going on, but it's only for 3 hours. So pull the trigger quickly. So really reinventing the whole wheel.
Yeah, Ariel, you were talking about that on Instacart specifically, right? You could buy things like after checkout also.
Yeah. So with Instacart, you know, they'll remind you, you know, did you forget anything before and after you check out? And that can be really great for inspiring, you know, those little extras that you forget. Like maybe you forgot to get some soda for a party that you're going to or something like that. So kind of reminding people after checkout of items that they forgot could be a great way to inspire impulse purchases without having them have to check out all over again, because with Instacart, you can keep adding to your cart kind of throughout the entire shopping experience. So there's no friction there of having to re-enter your cart information or anything like that.
Yeah, Instacart has those like hyper-targeted suggestions also, right? So like you mentioned a party, like Instacart might realize you're going to a party because you are buying chips and cups. And in this scenario, you are bringing everything to the party. So you're a very good guest. But yeah, it could potentially like use that data to target.
Exactly. And I think that's something that's very unique about the online world is that unlike shopping in store, when you're shopping online specifically with something like an Instacart or a Walmart that you have an account with and that you've bought previously with, they have all of that historical data to kind of lean on to then present you with items that you may continuously buy or something that is contextual, like you forgot, like, again, the party, you know, example. So I think that's kind of one of the strengths of e-commerce and inspiring impulse purchases is being able to lean on that data and those historical purchases from customers.
Yeah. The other strength is definitely like shoppability, right? So like on CTV, for example, or anywhere, but like this is an example where it's changed. The ads are shoppable now. You can click buy from them. That makes it a lot easier to follow the impulse to buy something that I'm seeing rather than having to think all of the thinking that I do between seeing it, looking it up, entering my mobile wallet information. If I can just click buy, it's a way more impulsive experience.
And I think when you think about shoppable media and obviously the QR code resurgence thanks to the pandemic, and also the fact that we know that as everybody's watching something on a bigger screen in their home, they are also, they have their small screen, they have their smartphone with them. It's very easy to just, you know, scan something and then quickly within, you know, 14 seconds, you know, buy something and then say, listen, if I didn't need it, okay, I'll return it later. In reality, you don't. And then your wife yells at you probably around 2 or 3 days after she realizes you bought it. This is theoretical.
That's which can be the happened. Day, like 2 or 3 days after it comes too, with how fast delivery is on these.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you guys multi-screen? Are you guys on your phone while you're watching TV? I definitely
absolutely.
Am.
I'm Gen Alpha, so yeah. No, I mean, it is something that I definitely...
Jeremy is our 12-year-old podcast guest.
I skipped a few grades. No, I think one of the things that it's such a trend, and I definitely, you know, and until... Frankly, it's, you know, that's for a lot of people, that's the only time that you can kind of get things done, you know, is that if you're multitasking, right? So, which then also means, by the way, people have their guard down and then they'll say, what the heck on a deal, as opposed to really when you're in that targeted kind of transaction, like I need to buy something for a wedding coming up type of mentality.
Sure. So impulse buying in a lot of ways is easier online. It's easier to click buy. It's easier to act on that impulse. There are also a lot of ways that impulse buying is more challenging online. So we were all at Advertising Week in October, and I attended a session where Hershey's U.S. head of media, Vinnie Rinaldi, said, candy is impulsive. So we're missing that person that's not walking the floor anymore because they're not in the checkout line. In other words, you're not seeing those candies as you're waiting in line. Barbara Connors, Vice President of Strategy and Acceleration for Kroger's Retail Media Network, took this even further in a recent Retail Brew story. She said shoppers are turning to e-commerce to avoid impulse purchases and to stay on budget, getting exactly what's on their list without being distracted by, say, an end cap filled with pumpkin spice flavored treats. So she went so far as to say, well, people are shopping online because they don't want to impulse buy. They don't want to get that extra candy bar. In what other ways does e-commerce present a barrier to impulse buying? And Arielle, why don't you take this one first?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the reasons we just talked about earlier is the speed at which people make their purchases. You know, you're kind of going in, you're going out, you're adding things to your basket, and then you're checking out. And then, you know, even with Amazon's Buy Now button, there's lots of ways that you don't even have to go through the entire checkout process. You're just hitting one button and then you're done. So that obviously, you know, takes away any of the time people spend browsing or thinking about other things that they need. So that's going to kind of take away from the impulse purchase instinct.
Yeah, you don't have those moments of delight, you want to call them that, that you get in the grocery store. I'm not accidentally walking through the candy aisle because I need the coffee that's at the end of it. Yep. I'm now just going for the coffee. And if I've subscribed and saved that coffee, if I have like the Amazon thing where I can get it monthly, I'm not even going and searching the coffee. I'm just getting the coffee. There's not even that opportunity.
I will say, just like as a bit of a counterpoint, I think that there are a number of apps that do a good job at creating a bit of a habit forming, open the app all the time kind of thing. You know, if you have push notifications enabled, and I've seen this, you know, GoPuff as one example, they do a really good job of this where they say spin a wheel basically every day and you're going to get some free points. And as a result, it becomes a bit of a thing where you start opening up the app more and more. And then you purchase things even when you didn't necessarily need them, just because there's a deal or there's some kind of limited, you know, window where you can get something that you wouldn't get normally. And I think the other aspect that is worth maybe touching on is the fact that, you know, social media is getting really good from a targeting standpoint. And as a result, you sometimes have situations where people see something and then they pull a trigger really quickly on something simply because of really good personalization of ads. And we even have data on this from Bankrate and YouGov, where Gen Z, 60% of them say that they've impulsively purchased a product they saw on social media.
That's a good point. But at the same time, on social media, you're not necessarily getting like the candy bar. You're not getting that like slight lift to the grocery order that you're getting. You are impulse buying the dress, and that's a big deal for that brand. But like from Kroger's perspective, you're not getting that Reese's cup that is a $2 lift that adds up.
Yeah, in some ways, you're right, though, that what an impulse purchase is kind of almost becoming reinvented a bit online.
Mm. Well, going back to that grocery example, you know, I think with another kind of challenge is basket sizes. Now that, you know, a lot of retailers are offering free shipping or they're kind of lowering their free delivery thresholds, customers aren't hunting around for, oh, I need to just add, you know, $2 more or $3 more so I can qualify for free shipping. So that's going to cut down on impulse purchases too. So it really kind of depends.
Yeah. Yeah. That can really not just like lose the impulse purchase, but also be more expensive to the retailer. Amazon, I don't think, is going to get rid of free shipping anytime soon. But if you're a Prime member, you might be buying that shampoo and that conditioner in like two separate back-to-back purchases just because you remembered you needed shampoo and then you remembered you needed conditioner. And that's two rounds of shipping for Amazon potentially. And that's also no buying the, what's the impulse buy for there? The hair ties.
yeah, the hair ties.
You're not buying that also while you're in the aisle, which is probably why I'm constantly out of hair ties.
And also not great for the environment either, I'll tell
not
you
that.
Not
great for the environment either. Not great for my hair.
Speaking of hair ties and kind of other categories, can I just share some random fun facts from last year? There are some category differences that are pretty major when it comes to impulse purchases. A Dynata study from last year found that actually 57% of females have purchased impulse purchase clothes or shoes online versus just 38% of males. If you look at electronics, that impulse purchase number is 27% for females and 49% for males. So it really kind of shows that there are pretty stark differences in terms of what an impulse purchase is depending on the group.
That's really interesting you say that, Jeremy, because it just came out that Best Buy and Home Depot are going to be doing live stream shopping during the holidays. And I thought that those were really interesting choices because I don't consider home improvement or consumer electronics to be impulse purchase categories, but maybe I'm wrong. And it seems like, you know, different people consider impulse purchases to be different types of things.
I know that they are impulse purchase categories because every time I go to the hardware store, I remember I need batteries at checkout and I buy more batteries.
There you go.
Why do you always need more batteries?
Because my computer mouse is always out of battery. Okay. I bought the cheapest mouse possible and so the battery life doesn't last on it. I need
a
new mouse.
Rechargeable one.
I know, I know. Okay, let's keep moving. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. Today, we'll rank in no particular order our top three suggestions for inspiring online impulse purchases. Jeremy, why don't you go first?
I think one of the main ways to get impulse purchases that I really love and recommend is just the idea of having limited editions that are only available at particular, you know, time frames, right? When you do that, it's a great way to increase loyalty with particular people who are just really aficionados of particular brands or categories. Plus also, it's something that people essentially understand and don't argue with, that it's only going to be here for a limited amount of time, which then inevitably causes them to add a number of other things to their cart and increases average order value.
Yeah, this one is definitely not just for like bigger ticket items too, but like smaller ones. So an example, if we're going back to the Reese's Cup, is in Easter, they have those Easter egg Reese's Cups, or like around the springtime. Those are really popular because they have a much higher peanut butter ratio than like the standard Reese's Cup. I had a roommate who would buy them up every Easter, and that would be our like Reese's stash for the year. If you're on Instacart, that same seasonality is still going to be effective. Maybe not quite as much, because like you do have sort of the health conscious part of your brain being like, oh, I don't need these Reese's cups right now. But you might be a little bit more inclined because the eggs aren't always available.
Yeah, I know. I definitely, you know, if I'm passing by a Starbucks and I'm within pumpkin spice season, I'm definitely going to go in and get a pumpkin spice latte, where I might not be doing that the rest of the year to save a little money.
I didn't know you were a huge pumpkin spice head, Ariel.
I wouldn't say I'm a pumpkin spice head, but I do enjoy me some pumpkin spice latte, a specific type of pumpkin spice latte.
I haven't had my one pumpkin spice latte of the year yet.
You have I've one every two. Year?
You
sound like Charlie from Willy Wonka, where like he saves up for
one candy bar of the year. And yeah, before we get too far down this rabbit hole, Ariel, why don't you give us another suggestion for inspiring online impulse purchasing?
Yeah. While it might seem a little counterintuitive, I think you can think about it through kind of the reverse logistics situation. Free returns is a great way to inspire impulse purchases because, you know, sometimes people are going to hem and haw, okay, like if I don't like it, if it doesn't fit me, if it doesn't taste good, what am I going to do? And I think kind of just removing that barrier to if returning the item is a great way to kind of convince people to part with their money. And I know a lot of retailers around the holidays do extended return windows. So, you know, I think that's just another way that they can kind of capture some extra dollar share during the holidays by, you know, inspiring customers to splurge a little and not really having any consequences if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, this is where you get what Jeremy was talking about before, right? You make the impulse purchase, you say, well, I'll return it, so it doesn't really matter. And then you don't ever get around to returning it.
Yeah, that's kind of a part of it.
The downside here is that if you do return it, especially with e-commerce, it can cost the retailer those shipping costs. But I think it's worth hedging that you're probably not going to get around to returning it. I know I'm definitely that consumer that is never going to get around to returning it.
I'd also like to think that you inspire a little bit of a brand affinity, you know, for making consumers' lives easier. Maybe you're not getting the, you know, $10 on the t-shirt, but you might, you know, have someone down the road say, oh, like I really enjoyed, or maybe they didn't enjoy the returns process, but if it was smooth enough to them that they would consider purchasing with you again.
Yeah, I don't know if you notice when you enjoy the returns process, but you definitely notice when you don't enjoy the returns process.
Absolutely.
You know, which also just makes me think like something that's like right beneath the surface that we haven't really said is that if you start to trust a brand or a retailer, you are much more likely to conduct that, you know, impulse purchase buy with them, right? So I think that that point is 100%. You know, you just have to make things frictionless, and then you start to, it becomes habit forming. And then there are certain people who it's just like, hey, I haven't, you know, visited so-and-so store in a while. I guess I should buy something, even if you don't necessarily need it. And that's one of those things where if you can create that habit, you're more likely to create that impulse purchase behavior.
I know that you're right. And the reason I know you're right is because I am a loyal Haribo fan. And anytime I see a new shape of gummy candy that I haven't seen before, I have to buy it to try it. And I'm not a grocery e-commerce person. I buy my groceries in person. But if I were buying them online, seeing a new shape on the digital shelf would definitely encourage me to make that purchase. Of course, that's not impulsive because that's for research, because I need to know how they all taste. And twin snakes are the best ones.
Okay, good to know. I don't think I've tried those.
Listen, we gave one, but I think it's only fair, Sarah, given that you're, you know, a retail expert, if you tell us what your favorite one is.
Wow, that's so unexpected of you to ask of me. My suggestion is low price samples. This is something that works really well in store, Sephora being the example there. When you are at Sephora and you're in line, you walk through a bunch of low price samples. One example is like the Supergoop sunscreen, I think, is a really common one, which is like the best sunscreen, but it's really expensive. But you like get that low price tube. They also have, we've talked about Sephora's loyalty program. I mean, they also have like free gifts for birthdays, but like these low price samples, you're still buying it. It's still that like incremental lift, to borrow a retail media term, on your purchase. And now you might become loyal to Supergoop. If Sephora or another retailer offers these low price samples at checkout, it's just another way that you might make that impulse purchase, right? Like you may not buy the bag of Hershey's Kisses that costs, how much do they cost? Like $6? That's a lot.
I don't know. It's a bag, depending.
Well, in this scenario, it would be individual Hershey's Kisses, which may not be economical, right? But but for the sake of an example, you might buy that individual candy bar. You probably won't buy that bag of it. So lower price samples are a good way to expose you to new brands, expose you to new products, but also encourage that impulsive energy.
Yeah. And I think like something that I think retailers should consider is not just the, you know, $3 candy bar purchase that they're going to be able to get, but also the long-term brand affinity that they could be getting from, you know, those samples. You know, I think trying something and you love it, you're going to go back to it again and again and again. So impulse purchasing, yes, is a great way to like boost sales in the short term, but it can also be a good way to boost sales in the long term too.
Yeah, I mean, this could lead us down an entirely other conversation, but what you're talking about here is the brand lift effect of retail media, or that's not what you're talking about, but that's directly related to this, right? Like retail media, you're seeing search ads, you're seeing display ads while you're searching for other things. We think of that as a really performance-oriented channel. It gets that incremental lift. We don't yet think of it as a brand marketing channel, a brand lift channel, but that's exactly what it is. Trying that new product is brand lift. It is brand marketing. And so that's that example of where retail media can be brand marketing.
Yeah, it's all connected.
Yep.
All right. Well, that is all we have time for today. So thank you for being here, Ariel, and happy birthday.
Thank you. Happy to be here and happy to celebrate with you.
And thank you for being here in the studio with me, Jeremy.
It was a pleasure. My birthday was 3 weeks ago and you said nothing, but so great to be with you.
Did I say
happy
nothing?
Happy belated birthday, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. See, one of you guys said something.
Happy birthday, Jeremy. My birthday is in like 5 months, so.
Happy early birthday,
thank
Sarah.
You, Ariel. Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and keeps things totally frictionless. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail and eMarketer podcast. And tomorrow, join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily.